Good afternoon, Seattle. But if you're listening to this at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Sunday, March the 28th, 2021, then good evening, planet. This is the Planetary Status Report number 3, and this is your good friend Dan, and we got a fun show today because we're going to be mainly talking with a friend of mine, my friend Jim Davidson. And before we get into that, I'd like to just say if you're listening to us on Sunday night at 11 p.m. at Eastern Standard Time, then you are very well listening to the WRMI studios in Miami and Okeechobee on frequency 5950 kilohertz. No foul language. This is radio. I often have an issue with certain bad words. I'll work on that. I'll remind myself of that. And I know that Jim and I both will work together on that. So let me talk about my good friend Jim. Jim Davidson has been involved in various kinds of freedom-based activities almost, well, pretty much his whole life. He's been a teacher, a consultant, a forensic accountant, an actor, an author, an entrepreneur. He's been involved in various types of estate planning and trusts. Currently, he is helping out with different startups, the Houston Space Society, the Individual Sovereign University since 2009. He has, since 1983, been involved with a passion in the world of aerospace. He has been a promoter of space travel, not just in a formal sense, which is, of course, the case, but in the informal sense that as an advocate in the freedom community, he is often discussing space travel as, and I should say space exploration and space settlement as one of the potential paths of freedom away from what some people call prison Earth. In recent years, his focus has been on intentional communities, freedom-based intentional communities, communities that are built from the ground up. And this is going to be one of the core subjects we're going to discuss today, is how someone like Jim is doing this, and also how, if you're interested, you can get involved. But Jim has been really involved in trying to get people organized to buy property, to work out basic arrangements, and to promote the idea that we can build stable communities on the basis of cooperation and on the basis of voluntary effort, and that we do not need coercion and force to live together. So there are some deep values in this. Yes, he's an entrepreneur. He's not a communist. He likes making money. But there are some core values that Jim Davidson promotes in his work. So I could read through everything he's done, and he's done a lot. He's been around the world. But without further ado, I would like to introduce you to my friend Jim Davidson. And Jim, would you like to say a little bit about yourself?
Oh, I think you've done a fine job. I am an entrepreneur. I've started a lot of businesses, and I also work with people in the private equity area to help find financing for businesses. So people hit me up about that from time to time. I did want to mention that I have concluded that the governments of the world hate people like me and don't want us to have any money. So I've decided to, just go with that, and I don't do anything in my own name anymore. I donate my time to different nonprofit ventures like the Houston Space Society. So if I'm doing a private equity deal and they get a fee, that fee goes to, Houston Space Society, not me.
Good. No, good. I mean, that's great. Currently, you're working on your Freedom Land DAO project, and we're going to get into more depth about that in a bit. But are you ready to jump into the first topic?
I am, and isn't that interesting that it's a big desert, but there's a canal through it?
I know a canal runs through it. I saw the movie with Robert Redford. No. Yeah,
That was a river runs through it, wasn't
yeah,
it?
it was.
Yeah.
I'm just fucked. Oh,
And that was about World War I or something. I can't remember all the details, but it was a weird sort of
That
movie.
was my that was a era an era, era style or you know how they talk about films that are part about a historical epic? It was a film relating to that historical period of Montana in right around World War I and after World War I, basically. Good old Montana. a river runs through it, basically. Yeah, it is what it is. Anyways, here's an article on the subject of the stranded ship, the Ever Given. And the headline is, How a Desert Wind Blew $10 Billion of Global Trade Off Course. And I'm not going to read the whole article. But what I found interesting going through the article is I could not find the name of the captain. And when I went to Google it, I Googled, you know, captain of Ever Given. And I got back a bunch of links, and none of them gave me the name of the captain. And at one point, this is what I read, Jim, it was something like, well, there were at least two official Egyptian authorities on board and a third person or something. It almost sounds like the ship didn't have a captain. And my first response, Jim, is, well, there's your problem. Right, Jim? You there? Jim? Hello?
Yeah, sorry. I was looking up the name of the captain of the Ever Given because I thought, well, if that's a mystery, I should definitely look for that information. And yeah, if there is no captain, that would be a problem. Although, oftentimes when a large ship, a large vessel is traversing a canal, the captain is not in control of the ship. A pilot who is knowledgeable about that specific canal or the port facility, if they're coming in to dock at a port, sometimes the pilot is in charge. So, you know, the helm may not be under the command of the captain.
Well, true, but who is responsible for the ship at all times?
The captain.
Right, and so if, and I know what you're talking about, with large ships, if you go into a port or travel through a canal, you'll usually have, as Jim points out, these other pilots who are actually piloting the vessel because they know the canal. They're the experts at that, so they're going to do it safely. So if this is happening per what we would think is normal, it was probably the pilot, or pilots plural, of the ship that, you know, were in charge when this happened, wouldn't you think, Jim?
Well, it's hard to say because, you know, I'm not familiar with that part of the shipping lanes, and I don't know all the details of this story, but I have just come from Snopes. And, you know, we always go to Snopes because we want to laugh at how the story has to be manipulated for the narrative. And there's a woman's name, and I'm not pronouncing it because I choose not to try, because I'll get it wrong. But apparently she's like Egypt's first female ship captain. Yeah. And Snopes is saying, and she is not the captain of the Ever Given.
Right.
So that is a false statement.
But what I'm saying, Jim, if you Google,
there is a person who is the captain,
right?
But you know, it's not her.
No, but Jim, I think that's interesting because when the when that particular nasty ship full of oil involved, you know, I think it was called the Valdez or something, the Valdez disaster. But you remember when that
Exxon Valdez?
Yeah, you remember the Exxon Valdez? It took 30 seconds for us to know the name of that captain. Okay?
Right. No, he was notorious almost instantaneously.
Right. But we don't... I think I flipped through 3 or 4 pages of links, and I could not find the name of the captain, even though I was... You know, yeah, I saw the Snopes link, Jim. All that told me is who Snopes thought was not the captain. I just want to know who the captain was. That's all.
Yeah.
Isn't that...
It does seem like that would be a reasonable thing for you to want to know. I feel that, you know, it's reasonable for you to want to know that. So.
Okay, can I ask you a question? If a large commercial airliner had some type of incident where they were blocking landings and takeoffs, do you think we would find out the name of the pilot fairly quickly?
I'm thinking yes.
Yeah,
I mean,
I would think so.
Generally, yeah.
Yeah, so let's say a trucker is driving his chicken truck down the road on Happy Chicken Day, and he fork drops or jackknives.
I'm sorry, what was the word that you just used?
Oh, crap, I swore again. You know what? I'm going to have to work on that. That happened, how many minutes in? Oh, crap, 6 minutes.
13 minutes, just before the 13th minute.
Oh, I think it was like, no, but we're 6 minutes and 46 in, so... Yeah, I'm gonna
have
to
go
call. Through
right, sorry. Yes.
You know, I'm getting used to the radio thing. I can't say bad words, no foul language. So, Jim, I want us both to agree, we'll reaffirm, no bad words. Of course, the only one screwing up is me right now. This is terrible. I can't even talk about it. But my point is, getting back to the core topic, if you had a chicken truck driver, okay, who did not use foul language because chicken truck drivers don't swear, and he were to jack...
Yeah, chicken truck drivers. Well, they hardly ever use foul language. Foul language. F-O-W-L, foul language.
They never do. They never swear, Jim. They never
well,
do.
Well, no, but they drive foul around. So, you know, they probably get enough foul that way.
Yeah.
They're foul enough as it is.
Well, if, so, that, if the chicken...
question for me, I understand the question about finding the name of this person. That's a good thing. But I got to say, you know, I've looked at the cross-section of the canal, and I know a little bit about, you know, the travel in that region. I've been to Somalia. I've been to Yemen. And I, you know, I've flown over that canal. And all I'm saying is it's... really deep channel in the middle, and somehow this has this boat is crosswise, so that the rudder is pretty much stuck in one side, and the nose is jammed in the sand on the other side. I mean, how do you do it? How do they explain this? This
well,
just seems
okay.
like a one of the false flags.
Okay.
The Patriot community is always telling me to worry about.
Right.
False flags. They just made this up. They just did this deliberately so that we would be thinking about it instead of what they're hiding.
Yeah, well, it's definitely stupid. But from what the articles I've read, this is what the articles say. They say that whoever was piloting the ship or whoever was in control overcompensated and accelerated pushed the throttle forward, more throttle towards the side of the was trying to get away from the side, but instead they went towards it. Like they were trying to steer away. The wind was blowing them off course, and instead of the throttle helping them get to the center, the throttle pushed them towards the side. And actually, when you think about ships that big and how much momentum they have, you really got to be careful with that throttle, don't you, Jim? Because there's not a lot of space for error in a canal, right? You know?
Well, no, there are two traffic lanes, and so arguably two of these container ships could have been side by side passing one another going in opposite directions.
Right.
I mean, it is a canal which it was built, what, a long time ago to make sure that the British and the French empires were, you know, thoroughly provided with canal traffic. And so it's been there for a long, long time. And it's as wide as it needs to be to take these container ships. And I don't know. I mean, there is a list of things you can do to be monumental screw-ups. And I think the guy, like you said, the captain of the Exxon Valdez, I don't know that he's working in shipping a lot anymore. I don't know. You could look that up. But it would be interesting to me if you can crash the Exxon Valdez and still make a lot of money as a ship captain. That would be an interesting factoid.
Well,
you know, whoever was driving the Ever Given that day, not long ago, you know, what do you do after that? I mean, how do you live that down? I mean, you go into a bar, two men walk into a bar, and there's the captain of the Ever Given sitting in a corner drinking his or her, or, you know, alternative pronoun of your choice, into a drunken stupor. I'm sure there's a joke in there somewhere, man. Walks into a bar joke.
Yeah, there probably is a walk into the bar joke. It's one of those situations where I have to remind myself, no foul language, Jim. I can't use any foul language. But, okay, do you think there's any chance at all that this was done on purpose?
I really have no way of saying. I mean, one of the things that, you know, could happen is that the system that is used to automate and make it possible for a small number of crew members to move one of these giant vessels, it could be that the automation had some failing. It could be that the GPS signal was, you know, not proper. properly aligned with the reality of the universe. It could be that there was a heavy wind. It's heavy winds has been used as the excuse. And then you had a theory we were talking earlier about the possibility that there was a security breach in the software, or that someone brought along a device that took control of the system.
Well, and this is partially based on a drunken story of mine from 1993, and I talked about it in the podcast last week, so I don't want to bore people, but I learned a long time ago that security at the docks ain't necessarily what people think it is. And so sneaking onto a ship to put some sort of a man-in-the-middle device, because as Jim pointed out, these modern ships are a lot like modern aircraft. They're very fly-by-wire, very computerized. It doesn't mean the networks are accessible from the outside via radio, because that would be really, really bad. But they are a network, and there are computers in there. So if you can bring a device onto the ship and put it into the network physically, then you could easily hack one of these ships. And that's the thing. You could probably make a device like this look like any kind of as long as you're careful.
And any kind of what?
Any kind of thing, any kind of stuff. Holy smokes. Hug is a hoogsy. I got to double check. I'm not doing so good on the bad words this time. But you could camouflage this device so it would fit in. You could make it look dirty and grimy. You could make it look like it was old and it's been there a while. And then you could even put it on a timer. And that device could have a GPS. And it could be relatively simple. Once you get to this location, make all the systems do this, like veer to port, and then accelerate to port, and then go into reverse, go to stern, and I think they could do this on purpose. I think somebody could rig a ship to do this. I do.
Right, and so then you look at all of the world actors, and you think who hates mankind enough to want to completely bollocks the shipping trade and the Middle East and Mediterranean, and there's a long list. Oligarch B, Oligarch C, Oligarch E, all of them.
I know, but here's the other thing too. You know that I generally am interested in the theory of trauma monkeys at this point. And one potential explanation for this, why they would do this, I think that trade is about to collapse for just pure logistical, logical. Civilization is cracking around the edge because it's a crony neo-Stalinist hellhole reasons. And I know, and I didn't say any real swear words there, I don't think. So I think it's going to fall apart, and maybe this is one of those ways of hiding that. I know that sounds counterintuitive, Jim, but maybe if you do this, it'd be like, oh, well, I know that everything went haywire, but it's because of that ship. That ship that blocked the Suez Canal.
Right, right. They're already saying that there will be a toilet paper shortage in North America because the ship ran aground in the Suez Canal in Africa, which is, I've been there. I mean, I've actually, flown across the Atlantic and flown across the Gulf of Aden, and I can assure you it's a very long way from North America, the Suez Canal. It's not nearby. It is a long distance.
Right.
And yet we're supposed to believe that there's an imminent toilet paper crunch because I don't know why.
Well, and so what about that as a possibility, that this is a kind of smoke and mirrors thing, and it's made, and what if, and this is going to sound really insane, Jim, because now you're going to call me super crazy, but what if it really is a lot of fiction? Like, what if it's not even, I mean, it probably is happening. I'm gonna venture to guess that you couldn't just make this completely up, but what if it just isn't really a full ship? Like, what if it's a kind of empty ship that looks like a full ship, and that when they decide to end the trauma monkey, it'll just move it out. It won't be a big deal. Like, I don't know. It's
Well, they'll have some other event happening, and they'll say, oh, and by the way, that ship that was aground in the Suez Canal has been cleared without any problems. Yeah. And then they'll show a 20-second video clip or a 2-second video clip, and they'll only be like, wait, there are no containers on that ship. What happened?
Yeah. and it's funny because one of the selling points of modernity was how flexible and efficient and capable the globalist modernity world was at responding to problems. But in the last 20 years, all I've seen is the total failure of that world to effectively respond. You know what modernity is really good at? Taking advantage of disasters for the sake of certain preferential groups. But in terms of helping us with disasters, modernity seems like a disaster engine so far, at least the portions of it aligned with the government, okay?
Right, and I think that's actually quite logical when you consider that what the governments of the world do is they centralize things. They do away with competition, and they make it only they can do this, and only like four car companies can do that. And then worldwide, there can only be about 12 car companies because nobody says why. And if there were 200 car companies in America, there would be, you know, a lot more resilience. There would be a lot of anti-fragility built in because we wouldn't be depending on a small number of groups of people to really get it right. We would have lots of different people. Some would get it right, some wouldn't, and the ones who didn't do well would go out of business, but it wouldn't be the end of the world. Whereas when General Motors failed in, what was it, 2009, everybody was told it was the end of the world. We had to bail them out. It had to be a government, Motors, and blah, blah, blah. And but, you know, my position was General Motors, who cares?
Yeah.
There's nothing about having a General Motors that's good. Maybe we should have 20 different car companies instead, or 200 different car companies instead. It's just a thought.
Well, you know, the other thing about this incident is that I could easily put it into the box of the easiest box to put this one in, the most logical box, is this is what collapse looks like. Like, we may not know all the reasons, but I'm of the opinion that things like this are going to happen, that as systems fail, when I say systems, I just don't mean computer systems. I mean, as the processes and systems that run the world fail, stuff like this is going to happen, isn't it, Jim?
Well, right, and one would expect more and more of it to happen because they have decided to make things as fragile as possible so that the smallest number of their buddies could get the most possible benefit from all of their cronyism. And when you do that, you end up with things breaking much more readily because they're so fragile. You're relying on a very small number of people to always get it right, and people are fallible. People don't always get it right, and so we're looking at best, in the best case scenario, in the optimistic world where you tell your friends to buy gold and you tell your friends to buy silver and ammo, in the optimistic scenario, we are looking at the change of one civilization into another.
Yeah.
We're looking at a time when things are so dramatically changing that all of the things that people had for generations expected would just keep on happening. Like Social Security. People tell me, well, it's as reliable as Social Security. And I'm like, really? So not reliable at all. Because I mean, when I was in my 30s, not that long ago, Forbes magazine did a survey, and people under the age of 45, something like 6 to 1, thought they were more likely to be abducted by a space alien than to receive their Social Security benefits when they retired.
Right.
I mean, and it's only gotten worse. So, you know, all of this stuff can't be expected. You and I have talked about this on your little Saigon report many times. It can't go on. You knew this in 2016, 2017. You knew it couldn't go on. I knew it couldn't go on. And I was like, well, what do we do? And I was like, well, yeah, I'm still in my house. And then I ended up moving to Ohio, which proved to be a strange choice.
Well,
but I did it. And, you know, it worked out. But still, I mean... The system cannot go on the way it was. And so the fact that people are now talking about it, well, after July 4th, President Biden says it will go back to normal. I'm like, yeah, but normal didn't work. Normal was failing. Normal got us to where we are now.
Yeah. I think the only thing normal now is the crazy. And one of the crazy things they're doing, and they've been doing this for a year, is moving goalposts. First, it was 3 weeks. Then it's like a few months. It's just ridiculous. This crap is getting too ridiculous to believe.
No, no, it was 10 days to flatten the curve, brother. It wasn't 3 weeks. 10 days.
I know.
We wanted to flatten a curve, and we flattened the global economy. That's
Yeah, flattened it pretty well.
I have to say, you know, it makes you want to start your own country.
It does. So on the topic of that, kind of, but sort of, I'd like to move on to the second topic, if that's okay, Jim.
Perfect.
So I met Jim Davidson in 2017, and, you know, we worked on some stuff together. It didn't exactly work out the way either one of us expected, because one of the things you find out in the freedom community is that because you're in the freedom community, there's a lot of money that just doesn't get sent your way. If Jim and I were like leaders of a communist collective, we would probably be rolling with Benzies and Benzos and champagne. But because we're actually interested in human liberty and dignity, we don't get any extra money from PAL. So one of the things that was very shocking to me is that there really wasn't a ton of money for raising for community work to do the kind of things that Jim wanted to do, and I also wanted to do. And that was this really crazy idea of trying to bring people together to purchase property, to build an intentional community around liberty-based values. And as I said in the introduction, Jim has been interested in this subject for years, long before I ever met him. He's been interested in this. In the last year, he's been working on a specific project related to, well, really related to a couple different, I would say, maybe channels or directions. He's been working on a Freedomland DAO project that relates to potentially using decentralized contracts and the world of crypto to enable the building of intentional communities. He's also been working on his Valiant initiative, which is in many ways just an extension of what he's been doing with Resilient Ways, which, again, I started working with him on that in 2017. So he's been focused on this for years. And then specifically, they've got a piece of property, which I think, and Jim can talk to this, in the Ozarks, that they have figured out a way to set up as one of their first sites for doing an intentional freedom-based community. And on that note, my good friend Jim, why don't you give us a discussion of that, how things are going, and then if you can, why not transition into a really simple question, and that is, what does community mean for you? But before you answer that question, would you mind talking about your project with Ozarkia?
Right, so Valiant stands for voluntarists and agorists living in absolute non-aggression today. And I like this acronym, so I've been sticking it on things for a little while now. And if you don't know what an agorist is, that's someone who believes that the free market is about the market. And so buying and selling, and agora is the Greek word for market. And so Sam Konkin had this essay, The New Libertarian Manifesto. I should probably read it. It's a good book. But if you don't like agorist, you can substitute abolitionist, because some of my friends think that the government is all about slavery. And so, you know, abolitionist is another word that I like in place of it. But voluntarist is, you know, free market, anarchy, that kind of thing. So what have I been doing? You know, in the mid-90s, I started writing for L. Neil Smith's The Libertarian Enterprise, and one of the other frequent contributors was a lady named Winnie McElroy, and so we started corresponding. And she was writing a series of essays called In Search of Galt's Gulch. And what she meant by that was that, you know, there's this book, Atlas Shrugged, and John Galt is the guy that everybody's interested in, and he's very freedom-oriented. And he and Midas Mulligan and Francisco D'Anconia and Ragnar Danneskiold have gotten together and acquired a valley in Colorado, and they've hidden it under a holographic screen so that you can't see it from the air. And they only invite the people who are worthy of going there. And, you know, it's an interesting look at what would be a freedom community. And it's, you know, it's a novel written in the 50s by Ayn Rand, who was, you know, run out of the Soviet Union when she was a teenager by the communist revolutionaries. So, you know, she obviously kind of has some axes to grind, and grinds them very thoroughly in this book. And if you've ever read the book, The Fountainhead, that's kind of a novel where she actually wrote a novel. And then the Atlas Shrugged book is a novel on to which you kind of added a bunch of preaching.
Yeah.
There's a speech in the back. It's like 64 pages or something.
It's a long speech.
He goes on and on. John Galt just like wants to hammer it home. Like Ayn Rand is convinced that she needs to answer every single question that's ever been written to her in a letter. And she does. But Wendy had looked at the intentional communities of the 19th century, some of which were freedom-oriented. One of the groups was run by a guy named Josiah Warren, and he had had bad experiences with the communist kind of intentional communities. I think one of the ones was New Harmony that did really bad stuff, and he was convinced that individuals need to be free to own their own production. If you own the fruit of your labor, then you're not a slave to others, and no one's freeloading off of you, and this is good. And so Josiah Warren came up with a small list of things that were important that helped make communities work, like having a place where everyone can eat together at the same time. Because when people are eating together, it feels like they're family, and they cooperate on basic things like, can you pass the salt, please? And that kind of thing helps to build a kind of rapport and a bond. And another one that he thought was important was to have a community money so that it's money spent within the community. It could just be a paper script like coupons or value bucks. But the idea is that it doesn't go to Walmart and then go to China. The money is staying in the community. If there's something that you can buy in the community, you do because you got the local money, and you know, you're not going to be able to spend that at Walmart probably. And so these are a couple of the ideas. And so I looked at that and I was like, well, I'd like to see who's doing this. And one of the people who was doing it in the mid-90s, who was interested in this same topic, was a guy named Michael Van Noten. And that's how I ended up in Africa. That's how I ended up working with him on his projects in Ethiopia and in Djibouti and in Somalia. And we thought we could build a free port in Africa. And there were all of these insurance companies in Europe that were interested in that concept because there was some piracy in the Gulf of Aden, and they thought, well, look, you guys could run fast boats out of your port. And we were like, yes, we could. And you could fund them. And they were like, yes, we could. And we were like, great. And we need to fund the port. And they were like, let's do this thing. And then 2001 happened, and the whole thing went haywire, and it didn't work out. But that was one of the people who was interested in this. There were some people in Texas. I got together with the Texas Constitution 2000 group and started working with them in December of 1998. That's how I actually happened to start my first eGold account, because they wanted to pay my expenses in gold. And I was like, okay. And I found out all about eGold and got very excited and got involved in that industry. And so I've been interested in free market money and alternative currencies since long before Bitcoin existed. If you read the Bitcoin white paper, it's actually partly about the fact that eGold was destroyed by the government. And how can we prevent that in the future? What can we do to completely decentralize the money in a useful way? And so, you know, that's part of that history. And I was there, so I know a little bit about this stuff. Texas didn't really work for me for a bunch of reasons. And so now I have a bunch of friends and contacts and business associates, and what we've put together is called freedomlanddao.com, and DAO stands for Distributed Autonomous Organization. And the idea is that each one of these communities will be separate and will be organized separately, and our intention for our community is that it will be a shared belief community. So it will apply for 501c3 charitable exemption as a religious community. And you say to yourself, well, what's the shared belief? I thought you were like voluntarists and people can believe whatever they want. And it's true. But there is this fundamental principle called the zero aggression principle, which says that no one has the right to initiate force against anyone else. And no one has the right to delegate initiating force. You're free to defend yourself. Defensive force is completely legit. But you're not allowed to start a fight by being aggressive and beating someone up and saying, give me your money. That's aggression. And this aggression will not stand, man. To quote the Big Lebowski. So that's the shared belief. And we think that that's a sufficient, legitimate, structure on which to have a tax-free, property tax-free claim. So we're working on all of that. We've got now a lawyer from Texas has gotten involved, and so we're looking at working with him on some of these things. But we have a contract for deed that we are making the payments on for the Hearts Ablaze Foundation in Arkansas, in a place south of Eureka Springs in Arkansas. And it's mountainous and it's wooded, and there's a vast tract of flat land in the south part, and then there's all of this interesting rolling hills up to the north where there are waterfalls. And actually, it looks like the waterfall of about 35 feet goes, down from the north, but the actual cliffs to the east of that, that kind of alcove, are at least 75, maybe 100 feet high. It's a really, really majestic bluff, and there's a cave underneath the waterfall. And it's actually a semicircular of waterfalls. I was up there today, and it's just amazing. We're going to post some video, some photographs later on the freedomlanddao.com website.
Cool. So with respect to this project, where do you think you are with this particular community? Are you at the point yet where people are ready to start sort of setting up their homesteads?
Yes, right. So what we have right now is 114 acres, and we already have commitments for 5.5 of those acres. And we started making the payments on this contract for deed on the 1st of March. So it's the 27th, and yeah, we've already got 5.5 acres committed. And people have been coming to see it. We've walked the property many times. I am actually still seeing new things. On my trip on Saturday, no, sorry, this is Saturday, on my trip on Friday, yesterday, we found a deer blind, a ladder leaning up against a tree, and up in the tree was this little, seat with an adequate space to put a beer cooler and sit up there and wait for the deer to come by. And there was a deer feeder across the, and there was a sign, just a board nailed to the tree that was in the middle of the clearing, and I was like, why is there a sign? And then I looked, and there's no words on the sign, and I was like, well, that makes sense, because deer can't read.
That's true. Deer cannot read. It's something we never really think about,
That's true. We don't, but at the same time, they don't write. They never write home, You don't get a deer John letter from an actual deer.
Can I ask you a question? With respect to the land itself, what are you guys doing with respect to the planning process or the thinking process on this to come up with a good combination of a lot of people in terms of spaces, like a lot of lots, but also not to have too many? Maybe I'm not saying this right, but you got to do some thinking about how many people you'd want.
Right, so there are 114 acres, and we figure that about 80 of those acres can be turned into one-acre lots. And most of those will be down in the south, and most of the land to the north will not be occupied full-time. There's a couple of people that want to actually be parked up in the mountain area in the rugged terrain, and we're fine with that. So that would be an acre or two that would be added to the 5.5, assuming that these folks get the money together that they say they will. And that would be some vertical ground. But most of it will be down south. And we're not going to have an infinite number of people in the community, but there will be a campground, there will be a bed and breakfast, and there will be a farmer's market at the front of the property near the gate so that people can come visit. And the question of how many people is too many, I don't know the answer to that. I know that you can have a community with too few people, and it becomes what they call a ghost town. And I guess that's because the voters are all dead and they elect a dead person mayor or something. I don't know. And that would never happen in a regular sort of town.
You know, a big portion of Chicago is technically a ghost town in that context.
I think if we're counting it that way, and there's a couple of places where they've actually had dead guys on the ballot win the election. So I don't know about voting. Voting doesn't seem like it's going to work out for people if they want to fix things.
No. You know,
my friend Claire Wolf wrote a book called 101 Things to Do Until the Revolution Gets Here, and that was in 1995. And, you know, she's a voluntarist type. And she says in it, America is at that awkward stage. It's obviously too late to fix things by working within the system, but it's a little too early to just start shooting them.
And what was the name of the author again for that?
Claire Wolf.
Claire Wolf, because that's a really funny anecdote. Because that I remember back in the 90s, and it was really a strange time. And I personally made really bad choices, like going in the military. But I remember back in the 90s, especially after Waco. And I got to say, one of the things that was really shocking about Waco wasn't just how shockingly evil Waco was, but how shockingly vile the response was from normal everyday America. Like, normal everyday America stood there and watched and in many cases mocked it and laughed as a community of people were burnt alive, you know?
Right, and that was terrible. And then the Danforth Commission was pretty much a whitewash. And to the extent that there are actually photographs and video of the FBI bleaching lots of the evidence with actual, like, you know, containers of bleach from the supermarket lined up on the ground, and they've got a table and they're washing evidence with bleach to get rid of it. I mean, it is that kind of a whitewash kind of operation. The Waco Massacre is a book by Carol Moore, who's a friend of mine, and it goes into, I would say, blistering detail about the people who were killed and why they wanted to live separately and how they were right that the government wanted to kill them all, and the government came and killed them all. And yet so many Americans to this day, I will hear Americans say, well, but they weren't they having like sex with children or something? Wasn't there a drug lab? Wasn't there this or that? And it's all excuse-based nonsense. The truth is that we used to have a judicial process in this country, the due process system, where you would be brought to a court and have the opportunity to defend yourself and present your case. And ever since John F. Kennedy was assassinated and his assassin, or supposed assassin, was assassinated, ever since Jack Ruby killed Lee Harvey Oswald, it's been pretty clear to a lot of us that it's hit or miss on the whole question of whether you're going to get justice from the judicial system or whether you're just going to get lied to and lied about. And if the mainstream media, the hoax stream media, I actually call them, if the hoax stream media get involved, you're going to be lied about. And you just have to understand that that's part of what it is now. It's no longer a system where there's a fourth estate of actual journalists who care about knowledge and freedom and truth. And almost all of the host stream journalists are paid prostitutes.
Pretty much. It really is that bad. You know,
we can say prostitutes on television.
Yes, right? We can on television, on shortwave, on laser broadcast, the Sector 23. I'm talking to you, the hoopla black folk of the last region before the Zorgogs. We can talk about prostitutes. That's okay. We can do that.
Okay.
Of course, our message,
I've heard, are kind of like intergalactically.
Our messages will not offend anyone for at least 100 years. our messages will drift through space, and then yes, at some point a century from now, they will reach a spaceship, and they will get ticked off mostly at you. But they're not.
A century of harmony doesn't seem like a worthy achievement. We've unlocked an achievement here.
Well,
give us a century of harmony, please.
A century of harmony. Well, here's the thing, though, on this topic, because it is related to the topic of intentional community. When I was a kid, I really did think there was basically a rule of law. Basically. Like, I wasn't stupid. I knew that some people got more help than others. I wasn't dumb. I knew that for a lot of poor people, access to the rule of law was kind of limited. So it wasn't perfect. There were problems. But when I was a kid, it was like, more or less, if you can get yourself a decent lawyer, you've got a shot. And it's still a little bit true, but I would have to say in the last year, it's hard for me to say that there is a rule of law for all sorts of reasons, not least of which, because of a lot of the illegal actions of governors and mayors and other officials, nobody really knows what is and isn't legal now. So it comes down to how angry or how upset or how crazy any particular magistrate or cop or even just clerk working at a store is. Like if some clerk says, well, I think I'm the dictator of the COVID and they see some old person without a mask on, they might just start wailing on that person. And from what I can tell, a lot of people are okay with that. So the rule of law is sort of disintegrating from both sides, isn't it, Jim? From the side of people in terms of being like decent human beings and from the side of government in terms of applying the law equally.
Well, I agree. And I think it's very much a case of people have lost sight of, or the school systems have deliberately refuse to teach people about the concepts of due process that actually predate the Constitution, like the habeas corpus. The writ of habeas corpus is much more ancient even than the United States, and it's actually worth looking into because it's one of those things where people got together and said, we need to know why you've been charged, and you need to produce the body, Mr. Bailiff, and we need to have some sort of process here. And due process is pretty much out the window. I had a neighbor across the street from me in 2017 who arranged, by calling their buddies in the sheriff's department, arranged to have the SWAT team deployed to my front door. And when I walked out of my front door at 9 o'clock one night, I had three laser targeting dots on my chest. Well, which, you know, I had my hands in the air and I was holding a cell phone. So, there was a record of this happening. But, you know, it's rather disconcerting to find laser target sights, red dots on your chest when you're just in your driveway. And the due process in that case worked out fairly well in that the prosecutor not only moved to have the case dismissed, but later also moved to have the arrest record expunged, which is not something prosecuting attorneys do all the time everywhere in the world. And so I feel that that was then, and this is now, and it's now 2021, and extrajudicial things are happening all the time. Police just execute people. Red flag laws are used to justify home invasions by the police without a warrant, without any presumption of innocence. Everyone is supposed to be presumed innocent until proven guilty. That's actually in the body of the Constitution. And then there's also a Fourth Amendment, which says that you're to be safe in your own home with your own papers from unwarranted searches and seizures. And yet we have them now all the time. Trump wanted to have the red flag laws, and Trump got the red flag laws, and Biden's using them as fast as he can to disarm as many people as possible. And the hoax stream media is not telling us how many of them are just being shot to death in their homes. Duncan Limp in, what was it, 2019, right? Was it 2019?
Actually, the Duncan Limp thing happened last year, didn't it, during 2020?
Was it? Okay.
Yeah, in fact, let me just double check that because he kind of came up
on... But he was in his bed sleeping, yeah. And they had a red flag group of evil, violent government thugs pretending to have a warrant, came to his home and killed him in his sleep.
That's right. That was March the 12th, 2020. That was
March 12th, 2020. Okay, so it was pre-lockdown. That's why I feel like it was a different world.
Well, it was...
And he's in Maryland. He's in the Baltimore, Maryland region. Yeah. And Breonna Taylor is another example. Again, the lady was sleeping, and the cops came and murdered her.
Yeah.
Why did they do that? Because they could. For no reason.
That's true.
She wasn't doing anything wrong. She wasn't breaking the law, and they didn't have to murder her. They could have, sent her lawyer an email and said, hey, why don't you have Brianna come to the courthouse, and we have some charges to read to her. No. They didn't have any charges against her. It was actually apparently the person, you know, the other person in her household that they were interested in. And they just shot her to death because they could, because they like to do that, because that's what the police are. The police are an agency that likes to torment people. That's why they hire bullies. Every police officer believes that he has a wife and children and family members who love him, but he doesn't. All of those people fear him because he can do anything and there's nothing they can do about it. And so they pretend to love him. And 40% of police spouses are beaten. But, you know, that's only the ones who are willing to come forward. I'm thinking it's closer to 100%. I think if a cop is married, then the wife is getting beaten all the time. And, you know, must be using makeup or something to hide the black eye.
Well, I mean, that is something that is pretty terrible, and it does happen. Hey, I want to kind of close this out with a positive note. So for the remaining time, would you be willing to sort of talk about your vision for the future for Valiant, for Freedomland DAO, for Valiant? Where do you see you guys going in the next few months, the next year?
So we're working on getting a grant from one of these foundations that has a lot of cryptocurrency money, and the grant would allow us to put the zero aggression principle as an agreement on a smart contract so that people could sign up to it and say, hey, you know, I've paid my $2 plus. If I violate this zero aggression agreement, then I agree to forfeit this, you know, 10 ounces of silver or whatever it is. You know, we're going to put that on the blockchain, and the money will be available to be, you know, distributed to the victims of people who aggress, even though they agreed not to. And so that's one of the things that we think might be a way of generating some cash flow for this. And then we're not setting up a hierarchy. What we've done is we've set up one of these for this Arkansas place. And there's a group that's looking for land in Oklahoma. There's another group that's found some land in eastern Tennessee near Rowan Mountain. There's a group in Maine. There was a group in Kane, but they got arrested last week. And they were working on a 70-acre property there. There's a guy in Idaho I'm working with. There's an outfit in Edmonton. There's a group in Ontario. There's a guy in Montreal, but his friend with land is in Ontario, so it's probably an Ontario project too. I know a lady on Vancouver Island who has some land and is part of a First Nations group out there. And there's a lady in Colorado who's looking at 160 acres. You and I have talked about Mimi Johnson before.
Yes.
And she and her husband, Nick, have found some really good land, and they're working on putting that together as a freedom community. And so the rules in Colorado are going to be different from the rules in Arkansas, and that's good because people need to have the freedom to set things up, to work locally. And also, in my vision, people will be able to move from place to place until they find the one that has it's set up the way they like, and the people there are compatible, and they, that's where they live. They choose to move to a place where, you know, it works for them. And that's what intentional means. You know, an intentional community is the concept of intending to form community with people who have similar interests. And my interest group is the people who want to fly in space and are disappointed that the government prevents them from ever doing that because the government hates humanity and wants us to be slaves.
Yeah. Another quick question before we close out has to do with, because I think what you're saying makes perfect sense with respect to what people are going to do. They need to find their own answers based on the land, based upon the community. But is there going to be opportunity for sharing knowledge within your vision? Are you guys going to develop a center of excellence? Are you going to consider creating a knowledge base and maybe even a form of study and education to help people?
Because a lot of people... We have a group here in Arkansas that's wanting to form a Freedom Guards Academy. It's a group called Freedom Guards, and they've just started out, and they're based on one of the Freedom Cells here in Arkansas and a different one in southern Missouri. So there are two guys leading that, and Isaac Ashby and Chris Chu. And then I'm helping them with the planning. And yes, the plan is to use up an acre here in Arkansas on building a Freedom Academy where people would come to learn about freedom and also learn about self-defense, learn about how to use different tools, learn about how to do things like picking locks and, you know, whatever it is that people need to know so that they can do whatever it takes to defend freedom.
Yeah. And a lot of this includes things like, I would think, understanding how to evaluate property for agriculture and understanding water sources, because these are things that are critical in picking property, aren't they?
Yes, and as it happens, we have a lot of water that flows through our property. It's really rather stunning. The place where the spring-fed pond has its overflow, 3 weeks ago it was about 500 gallons a minute. Now it's over 2,000 gallons a minute. It's just roaring through there. And we have a lot of water because we're half a mile or quarter mile from the Kings River, which is one of the major north-flowing rivers in this part of the country.
Before we totally close out, is there anything you want to say to anybody as far as this project goes, how they could get in contact with you and maybe
well,
get involved?
The website freedomlanddao.com has my email address and several business plans, and so you can contact me through the contact information and those documents which are on that site.
Cool. We've got a few minutes left, and so if you don't have anything else you'd want to talk about, I have a wild card question for you, but a really quick one.
Okay, I do have a walked into a bar joke. It's really quick.
Okay, no, then do the walk into the bar. I want that. I want it.
Two fungi and an algae walk into a bar, and they say, "We're liking it here."
Oh, that's a wonderful, wonderful joke. In fact, because that's funny and happy, I was going to ask you a question. There's not enough time to ask you about. I got to say, the pictures you've been sending people, the pictures you've been posting on Twitter, and just the general impression I have is that this has been like a really exciting time, and it looks like things are starting to work out for something that you've worked on your whole life, really.
Well, I was a very young child when I wanted to fly to the moon because there was a guy orbiting the moon when I was 5, and he was on television. I thought by the time I grew up, that would be normal. And boy, was I mistaken.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. A lot of us had a vision of this time, the time of the 2020s when we were kids. It's like, when I was a kid, I didn't expect it to be perfect. And I did expect there to be problems. In fact, I kind of just felt it would be a
but
problem.
But you expected C-Lab 2020 at least, right?
Yeah. You know what I didn't expect was a sort of just lumbering resignation and the tripping and falling towards disaster. I didn't really expect that. Anyways, I'm going to kind of close this out really quick. Before I do, I just want to say thank you, Jim, for participating with us in this. And I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you, sir.
And I'll talk to you later, okay?
Okay, bye now.
Bye. So that was my friend Jim. And of course, you know who's guilty of swearing too much in this context is good old Dan. What can I tell you? I have to work on the profanity when it comes to this radio thing. And this has been radio, in a sense, right? Also a podcast. And if you're listening, I want to thank you for listening to WRMI on 5950 kilohertz. And for everyone else out there, I don't know what else to say except, you know, be careful. If you're a Christian, I think it's good to pray these days. And maybe one of the things worth talking about very quickly is this the conflicts that are developing among people. And these conflicts are real. And to some extent, they're starting to put pressure on families, on brothers, on sisters, on moms and dads, and people are looking at each other as if the person next to them is the enemy. And, you know, we've all had these experiences, no matter how you feel about the COVIDs and the vaccine and everything else. I don't have an easy answer. In fact, I'm kind of leaving you with this as almost a challenge, but as a general question, how do we solve this? Because I don't know that we can. I think that we're at the point now where, and I don't know how else to put it, but if you cannot see with your eyes or hear with your ears, I'm not sure that there's anyone that can help you. You know, we are now at the point of the game where we do have to recognize the signs. And you can think of this as being religious or spiritual, and you can discount it that way. But what I would suggest is don't discount it. Don't blow it off. Don't pretend. Don't say to yourself, well, maybe I'll have another day to do the right thing or to solve a problem I wasn't going to solve. I would treat every day now that seems even remotely normal as a special day. Every day now that seems even kind of like something that you used to remember as being, you know, a treasure, a kind of gift, because it's possible there are days coming that are going to be much more difficult. So to all you out there on the radio land, radio world, and for all the listeners who are listening to this as a podcast, and for all those who are checking to see if I use bad language, well, I did, but I'm going to bleep it. Have a great evening. Have a great day, great weekend, great everything. Have a great Monday tomorrow, and talk to you later.